Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities with Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. New York State lawmakers were back in Albany this week for this year's legislative session. Democrats remain in control but have lost their supermajority in the Senate, while Republicans are leveraging national momentum for conservative policies. But for both parties, the focus seems to be all in one place: pocketbooks. The New York Public News Network's Jung Yoon Han reports.
At a news conference Friday, State Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie gave New Yorkers a taste of what to expect from Democrats this year.
You know, I don't want to spoil anything, but I think people are going to be pleased to see how much of a concentration we're really going to have on trying to put money back into people's pockets.
Both parties are pushing hard for policies that address affordability this session. That's because Democrats, like Assemblyman John T. McDonald III, are keenly aware that Republicans across the country won on promises to tighten border policies and improve the economy.
I've always known that affordability and safety are the most important issues in people's minds. And we need to make sure that we are walking the walk and talking the talk when we come to those terms.
That's why Governor Kathy Hochul is teaming up with state Democrats to work on a, quote, affordability agenda for the legislature to consider. That includes sending rebate checks of up to $500 for qualifying families and individuals, expanding the state's child tax credit system, and increasing access to child care. State Senator Michelle Hinchey, a Democrat, says affordable housing policies and expanding access to sewage and water are crucial to reduce the cost of living.
We have to do a lot more to make sure that we have programs that make it easier to build new units in communities across upstate New York.
But Republicans, like State Senator Tom O'Mara, say Democrats aren't making affordable policies. He points to their tax proposals and plans for renewable energy, which he thinks would negatively impact the state economy.
I just don't think that the approach that the governor and the majorities have been taking is realistic. I don't think it's going to be reliable, and it's not going to be affordable either in the long run.
Another topic lawmakers will address is education, specifically how the state distributes funds to school districts. But Republicans like State Senator Pat Gallivan question that proposal.
It doesn't seem fair to me if we're saying that we're going to give more money to people who live in certain zip codes than providing for those that live in other zip codes.
The governor is expected to emphasize affordability and health care, among other topics, during her annual speech to the state next week. In Albany, I'm Jung Yoon Han with the New York Public News Network.
As the session got underway this week, Democratic Assemblywoman Carrie Werner has set her priorities for the year. The Legislative Gazette's Aaron Shella Levine reports.
Werner's 113th district encompasses parts of Saratoga, Washington, and Warren counties. After a win in November, Warren is entering her sixth term. She says she wants to hear Governor Kathy Hochul examine the state's growing affordability issues in her State of the State address on January 14th.
Why is housing so expensive? Why is health insurance so expensive? Why is the price of energy and home heating so expensive? Why does it cost so much to buy food? To really look at what are the policy origins of the increase in pricing that we're seeing. You know, some of it obviously is, you know, residual supply chain issues. Some of it is rising labor costs. But there is probably more than that. And I don't think that just providing a $300 or $500 one-time check is the way to deal with affordability. It really is going to take us looking hard at what is driving up the cost of business in New York that is being passed on to consumers in terms of higher prices. And so I'm really looking for her to show some leadership on that.
As the state moves closer to an all-electric grid, Warner has expressed skepticism, saying more rural parts of her district may not be equipped to handle the jump without significant cost to residents.
We have to do a better job of balancing our desire to shift to alternative energy sources with the cost to consumers. And we have to really think about how to manage this process in a way that doesn't drive energy costs higher for consumers. Because right now, I think what's happening is that the energy companies, with all the upgrades they have to make to the grid to accommodate a wealth of distributed energy sources, it is creating, it's adding a lot of cost. Likewise, because the technology for utility scale battery storage is not yet been developed and commercialized, we have to have basically duplicate power. We have to have not just the renewable power, but we have to have that same capacity in other forms of generation so that if the sun isn't shining or the wind isn't blowing, we can still heat our houses and power our businesses. So it's, I think, being more thoughtful about this transition and factoring in both reliability, availability, as well as consumer cost.
The state closed the Great Meadow Correctional Facility in Washington County in November, transferring more than 500 employees to different facilities across the state. Warner says she'd like to see the state do more to support the impacted communities.
One, for the state to provide some financial assistance to Washington County to make up for the loss of economic activity that the closure of the prison represents. While we are looking for the second piece of that, which is to try and figure out relatively quickly, how can that site be redeveloped? What can it be redeveloped as? There was an article in the paper not too many months ago about a real success that they've had down in Orange County, redeveloping one of the closed prisons down there. So I think we're gonna look at that as a source of inspiration on what did it take to make that happen. And then lastly, there's the Great Meadow, it turns out, is in a forest preserve county. And so we need, just like with McGregor, we need some legislation to be passed and then a constitutional amendment to get that facility out of the forest preserve so that it can be redeveloped.
You can find an extended interview with Warner at WAMC.org. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Aaron Shello Levine.
Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. This week I sat down with New York State Senator Liz Krueger, a Democrat and one of the sponsors of the Climate Change Superfund Act in New York that was signed into law recently by Governor Kathy Hochul. Krueger was obviously pleased, but after a lawsuit was filed against Vermont's Superfund law, she expects New York will face the same.
Well, we expected lawsuits. So again, Vermont's law is not exactly parallel to ours, but close enough that we will watch carefully the complaints against Vermont. And we suspect we will see the same or similar lawsuits coming out of the largest oil, gas, and coal companies in the world, because under our law, they would be the ones likely on the list to have to pay a share of the $3 billion assessment for 25 years, $75 billion to New Yorkers to help us cover the already enormous costs of remediation and repair from climate damage. And I certainly want to note, given that we're talking today, January 9th, that a huge portion of the major population center of California is facing wildfires now spreading across the whole LA section of California. So we need these monies. The people of New York are going to have to pay all of these costs unless we can get the guilty parties to pay some share of the pollution they have created.
Yeah. Do you have confidence that if these lawsuits make their way to the Supreme Court, that New York would prevail?
I am not an attorney, and I'm certainly not the kind of attorney who would understand how Supreme Courts make their decisions. I just know that we already have a federal Superfund polluters pay program. It's specific to pollution in the land. This bill addresses pollution in our air and water and environment. So it's a different target for other kinds of pollution. But again, the Superfund federally has stood up in court with lawsuits against it since, I believe, the 80s. New York State itself has its own program, its own state Superfund program that has stood up. We have our own history of when we learned that General Electric was destroying all natural life in the Hudson River because of the amount of PCBs they were releasing into the river. We held them accountable for a significant portion of the cleanup. So while this is significant, it's not unprecedented within U.S. law at the federal and state level. So again, it'll be up to the Attorney General to represent the state of New York. And she worked with us on this law, also under the belief that this would stand up, but with the expectation that we are likely to face lawsuits.
Yeah. And the issue on the other side of the aisle, the Republican side of the aisle, always seems to be, well, if you do this to the fossil fuel companies, you hold them responsible, they'll pass it on to the consumers. And I spoke to Blair Horner from NYPERG, which is a good government group, of course. He says that's nonsense. This is going to save New Yorkers money.
And he is absolutely right. This is an assessment for past pollution. These companies don't exist or live here in New York, so they can't even threaten to pick up and leave and take their workers. None of the companies likely to be on this list have an actual presence in New York. That doesn't stop them from selling us oil and gas products very often at gas stations under the names of these major companies. I'll just say Exxon and BP and Sunoco. So are those likely to be on the list? Ultimately, yes. Are they going to close the selling of their gas to us? No, of course not. But are they going to be able to pass it on to us with increased costs of the gas pumps? No, they're not either, because not every company is going to be assessed, only the largest, most guilty. And they're certainly not going to raise their prices so that they lose competitively to other gas stations. They will just absorb the cost. And even though I think you and I think $3 billion a year for 25 years is a lot of money, when you look at how much these companies are making right now, the largest amounts annually they have ever made before, this money is a drop in the bucket for them. So it is going to be a win for the consumers of New York. I don't know what they're thinking.
That's New York State Senator Liz Krueger, a Democrat. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York has become the first state in the country to mandate paid prenatal leave for pregnant workers. Starting with the new year, expectant New Yorkers are now entitled to 20 hours of paid leave for prenatal checkups, ultrasounds, and other appointments. The Legislative Gazette's Jesse King spoke with State Labor Commissioner Roberta Reardon to learn more.
This is for all pregnant workers in private sector employment, whether they're full-time or part-time, and they are allowed up to 20 hours a year for prenatal healthcare visits. And that year starts when the first time you take the benefit. So it's not January through December. It's if you take it in April, it's April through to the next April. And it is for that pregnant worker to go for tests, for monitoring, for exams, discussions with your healthcare provider about to make sure that you're going to have a healthy birth, fertility treatment, very important, and of course, end of pregnancy care. So very comprehensive. It is for the pregnant worker alone. It's not for the partner. And it is it is really exciting because for a long time, pregnant workers, particularly women who worked hourly jobs at lower wages, were really stuck having to make that decision. You look at the bills on the kitchen table and you go, ooh, this week, I really need my full paycheck. I'm going to move that exam off a couple of weeks. That's not a good idea. Everybody knows that all the statistics say that a little preventive care, particularly with pregnancy, really pays off in the short term and the long term. The outcomes are always better. So we don't want any pregnant worker to have to make that decision. Don't ever have to decide, do I get my paycheck or do I go for a checkup? And for the governor, it's personal. She's a mother. She knows what this has been like. And she's very focused on making sure. She always says, New York State is a wonderful place to live and work and raise a family. We just have to make sure it's also affordable. And this is part of making it affordable. You're going to be able to make your hourly wage and visit your doctor at the same time.
So how do you access these hours? Do you have to tell your employer that you're pregnant and that it's for a prenatal visit?
Yes. And it's pretty easy. Most prenatal visits are scheduled well in advance. Very rarely you go at the last minute. But even if you have an emergency visit, you can use this benefit. But you should let your employer know as soon as you know what your schedule is so that they can make whatever arrangements they need to make. But you go off to your appointment and you get paid your regular wage while you're at your prenatal appointment.
And what should business owners know now that this law is in effect?
So first of all, the New York State Department of Labor is here to help. If they have any questions or concerns, they can certainly contact us. Easiest thing to do is go on the website and, alert us that way. We have a lot of people from the DOL who go out to businesses every day, whether it's workforce development side or from worker protection side, and they bring this information with them. That we're doing a big social media campaign. And actually, it's why I'm talking to you, because you're an important part of our campaign, being able to alert your listeners that this benefit is available. And if they have any questions, they should talk to us and we'll walk them through it, because more than anything else, we want to make sure that businesses are able to fulfill their responsibilities.
So what if you exceed the 20 hours? Do expectant parents have other options that they should be keeping in mind?
Well, you do have paid family leave, and there's also FMLA. That's a federal program. There's paid sick if you want to use that, although, I bridle a little bit when people say use your paid sick time for pregnancy, because being pregnant is not really being sick. But if you go through all of your paid prenatal visits and you still need more time, that time is available.
Governor Hochul has referred to this measure as a way to promote maternal and infant health, but also, like you said, affordability. Where do you feel the state has, left to go to make things easier on parents?
Well, stay tuned for the state of the state. Thank you for asking me that question. The governor has a really exciting message to roll out, and it really is about affordability. And there are a lot of things in the state of the state to support families one way or the other. I know she's been very, very focused on childcare, accessibility, and affordability over the last couple of years. And she's already made a couple of announcements about that. But she understands that, we love being here, but we want to also make sure we can afford to put food on the table and take care of our families appropriately. And she's got a lot of very exciting new initiatives to announce on January 14th. So tune into the state of the state.
New York Labor Commissioner Roberta Reardon speaking with the Legislative Gazette's Jesse King. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is resigning as leader of the Liberal Party and will step down as Prime Minister after his party selects a new leader. In New York's North Country, those involved in cross-border issues are closely watching the political landscape north of the border. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley with more.
Broadcast live on Canada's major networks, including the CBC, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau stepped in front of the cameras Monday morning.
I intend to resign after the party selects its next leader. This country deserves a real choice in the next election, and it has become clear to me that if I'm having to fight internal battles, I cannot be the best option.
State University of New York at Plattsburgh Center for the Study of Canada director Christopher Kirkey says while some may be startled by Trudeau's announcement, his departure had been brewing for some time.
Average Canadians have begun to think over time that the country is frankly headed or has been going in a direction that they're not comfortable with. And they'd like to see the political pendulum swing back more towards the center, not necessarily toward the right side of the political equation, but more in a centrist direction. And they didn't see that happening with Mr. Trudeau.
Former Democratic Congressman Bill Owens is a member of the advisory board of the Canada Institute at the Woodrow Wilson International Center and at the Canadian-American Border Trade Alliance. He too notes that Trudeau's departure has been building for months.
He's had a number of defections from his own party calling for his resignation. His polling is in really bad shape. He's 20 to 25 points behind the Conservative leader, and I think it makes sense for the Liberal Party to select a new leader and maybe be able to turn the election around.
Kirkey says Trudeau's announcement marks a tremendous moment in U.S.-Canada relations.
The announcement by Prime Minister Trudeau, and with the oncoming installment of Donald Trump as the President of the United States, who has, as you know, promised to introduce tariffs as high as 25% against all imports from Canada. It's the least opportune moment you could ask for in some respects to have a steady hand on the wheel with regard to Canadian political leadership.
Owens does not expect Trudeau's resignation and the change in Canadian government to impact cross-border trade.
I would be very surprised if it had any material impact on our relationship, both at the federal level, but also at the local level. I don't see it dramatically changing. My experience over the last 30 years is that whether it's a Liberal government or a Conservative government, the impact on trade is minimal. Both organizations want to make sure that the relationship between the U.S. stays healthy and prosperous, if you will. And I think the real concern for Canadians is, of course, Mr. Trump and his tariff threats.
Canada must hold federal elections by October.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
New Yorkers appear to be more confident about the economy following November's election. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports.
The latest New York State Index of Consumer Sentiment poll by the Siena College Research Institute shows increased economic optimism among New Yorkers, particularly Republicans, likely influenced by the November election. Poll director Don Levy says the survey released Wednesday finds the index is up 2.2 points from the third quarter of 2024 to 78.1. That's 4.1 points above the national index. And that's despite a 3.9-point national increase. The overall index is above the break-even point of balanced optimism and pessimism for the first time since June 2021.
Clearly, the election had an enormous amount to do with it. We've seen this before, that as soon as the party in power in D.C. changes, we see a flip-flop in sentiment by party here in New York. So right now, Republicans are dramatically more confident about the future. In fact, when you would just ask them about future conditions, both their personal ones and the overall economy, they have a skyrocketing amount of optimism. Democrats are moving in the opposite direction. They feel better about exactly how they are right now, what they can afford today versus what they could afford a year ago. But when you ask Democrats about a year from now, 5 years from now, they are decidedly more negative. So you throw all that together, and the conclusion is that New Yorkers as a whole are slightly more optimistic than they were last quarter.
Levy says consumer optimism has pushed buying plans up sharply across the board.
Each of the five major goods that we track, cars, electronics, furniture, homes, and home improvements, are up and up strongly in the neighborhood of 4 to 7 points. What really was interesting, right now, 34% of us say that we're going to purchase furniture valued at $500 or more over the next 6 months. That is the highest number we have ever seen in our tracking survey that goes back now over 20 years.
Although residents' worries over gas prices, as tracked by the survey, are at their lowest level since early 2021, Levy says concerns about food prices are tied for their highest mark ever, with 81% of New Yorkers saying the cost of groceries is having a serious impact on their monthly budgets. Denise Lee from Long Island, who is wintering in Albany, left the supermarket with a small basket of groceries. She says the prices still sting.
A little bit too high. Like this morning, I saw about the eggs because of the bird flu. That's something, you know, but you got to live.
According to an area grocery chain's website, a dozen eggs cost around $5. Gas prices in the Albany area continue hovering around the $3 a gallon mark. Albany resident Douglas Gillian believes grocery and gasoline prices could be stabilized if nations would collaborate to hold production and distribution costs down.
When it comes to prices, that's one thing. As long as countries can't work together, learn how to hash things out in a right, normal, neighborly way, without trying to control each other's economy. The economy, I believe, is based on a lot of things that are upcoming in the future. Some people call it prophecy. Some people may call it a change in the dynamics of government.
Levy is keeping a keen eye on that.
Right now, with Republicans, most especially all New Yorkers, feeling a bit of optimism, that's going to be the test. If 3 months from now, 6 months from now, New Yorkers feel as though their dollar is going further at the grocery store, that's really going to hold this uptick in consumer sentiment. In fact, we perhaps see it go up even more.
Levy says with incoming President Trump promising tariffs as well as other changes that will affect the economy, we'll see how consumer sentiment moves early in 2025.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas. And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2502. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustino. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.